Welcome along to Wise Men Say, brought to you in association with Love Supreme, with Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker. I told you we'd have a win to talk about. I had to get one right eventually. To discuss it with us, Editor-in-Chief of ALS, Martin McFadden. You haven't been listening to the Smiths on your way over, Martin, have you? Because last time I got loads of negative feedback from you, and that's what you blamed.
Is that right? Yeah. I've forgotten about that.
I think you were just making it up, to be fair.
I was listening to Radio 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
book reviews.
Book reviews.
Aye, read by children.
I don't have a clue where to go from that. Yeah. Craig Clark's here too. He's the source of those Fletcher celebrations at the weekend, by the way. After patting him the other week in the article, Craig, that's what I think. That was ages ago.
I've moved on since then. My reaction myself.
Would it be great though, Fletcher got asked about at the end of the game. He says, well, some knob called Craig Clark done this article.
Aye, because that would have sent me into like the fame stratosphere, because, like, you know, who is this Craig Clark? You know,
the only CC he's interested in is Krispy Kreme.
It's like a weird thing whenever you're out with you, somebody will come over and go, well, you're that Craig Clark off the internet.
It's not off the internet, just out of life.
How do you transcend the internet?
You don't have a photo on any of your stuff, do you?
He does.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always posting pictures of himself. Oh,
yeah.
He's a narcissist.
Yeah, on Twitter, but I mean, you know, you just generalise by saying the internet.
What is this conversation about?
I haven't
exactly
got a clue. Should we talk about the football?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Everybody happy with it? 7 out of 10 from everybody, I thought, Martin. Fletcher certainly more than that. More on individuals, more on Fletcher later. But talk about getting a win when we needed it. You know, we really did need that, didn't we? And I didn't think anybody had a bad game, personally.
No, I thought we were decent. I mean, obviously we got the early goal, which is what you always want, and then their goal was a bit annoying. I think it was Gomez who didn't really sort of track Charlie Adams as much as he should have. I watched it again, because I'm sad, and it's definitely even
a few
even
players, wasn't there? Billy Jones could have was it Billy Jones? No, who was it who could have stopped the free kick? It was Buckley, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Buckley.
He was offside, and then he could have slowed it down a little bit.
Exactly, he could have stood in front of
him. And O'Shea backed off a little bit too much.
But the defence was backing off, and then the midfield didn't pick anybody up. I mean, obviously, for every goal, you can watch it again and say that was his fault. But I was happy with Gomez's contribution. I've been wanting him to feature more, especially when Rodwell wasn't doing so well in earlier games. I would have sort of taken him off earlier or started with him, but at the same time, I think it's quite fair that Poyet's kind of like stuck with the players who sort of performed a miracle last year. I kind of thought Larson might struggle to get a game, but he's kind of like stuck with that team. You know, the first game of the season, the lineup was very similar to how we ended the season. And then I think the new players are gradually being bedded in when they kind of like they have to earn the chance, and I think that's good. I think it's the same with, I don't know if Brown's still injured, but Virginie's obviously performed really well there, and he didn't deserve to be dropped, so he's been kept in the team.
Well, that was an interesting one, the Virginia one. We'll definitely get onto more of that. You mentioned Rodwell there, Craig. Were you surprised? I mean, we had a full debate on here last week about Jack Rodwell, and he has dropped him in the end. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I suppose it worked. It was justified. Although I'm not sure I'm quite as sold on Gomez maybe as Martin. He had a couple of moments, didn't he, there, back pass that, if it had been to anyone but Peter Crouch, i.e. someone who can move slower than a tortoise, they probably would have scored.
If that was Victor Moses, we would.
Yeah, and there was that other weird moment where O'Shea gave him the ball and he just stood looking at it, facing his own goal for about, it felt like an age, and then offloaded it somewhere and then was subbed about a minute later. And it was like, I don't know, he's got a very strange pace to his game. He's an odd player.
I thought he made a difference, so personally, I think, you know, he was available for a pass and he helped keep possession of the ball.
I just like him to be a little bit quicker with the ball, I think.
I think he's just more natural in that more advanced midfield position than Rodwell is. You know, I think Rodwell, you know, we played him deeper against Burnley and he looked more comfortable, like making runs from deep and being that kind of box-to-box player. Whereas I think if you're going to be the more advanced of the three players, you need to be more skillful, you know, and have a better touch, and I think Gomez has got that.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. But it would mean if you're going to play Rodwell deeper, you'd have to drop Larson
for sure.
And I think Larson, despite the fact yet again there were elements of the crowd ironically cheering him when he was substituted. Not many, mind, but there was definitely a few.
I never hear all this people come in and say, like, wonder where you sit compared to where I sit.
Well, one of my mates was in the Premier Concourse and said the people behind him just slagged him off for the entire game. I don't think he was as good as he's been in other games, but I don't think anybody, personally, the player who people want out.
I don't think the performance was as great as some people make out collectively.
No,
but
yeah.
I don't think anybody had a bad game personally. Like I said, 7 out of 10s all over Fletcher, better than that. But I asked Gus Poyet at the end of the game about the consistency through the side and about Jack Rodwell.
And importantly, the day there was no passengers. Every single player played well.
Yeah, I think it was like that. It wasn't our best performance, but it was a decent one. No bad performance from anyone, fighting, looking for goals, holding, fighting. What you need to win a game in the Barclays Premier League.
You've been asking for patience for Jack Rodwell. Was the decision to leave him on the bench today just a little nudge to him?
No, it was based on the team. You know, there's two strikers in there and what was needed just behind. It was just a matter of the shape and what I was thinking about the game. We know Jack perfectly now. Perfect. You know, he plays 7 games, 8 games. We know what he can do, what he cannot do, how much he understands, what he doesn't, what we can take advantage of football, how much better he's going to get. And now we're going to start working with him specifically on that role that we want Jack to be in the future. And I'm sure he's going to be great now because everything is clear and he's going to be much better.
Okay, I'm not sure I'm buying his reasoning for keeping Rodwell out, Gareth. Again, we had a discussion last week, and I think you sort of, I'm not going to say persuaded me that we should stick with Rodwell, because I wasn't sort of suggesting we should drop him. I just thought it was a worthy question to put out there, and it's proved, because he's dropped him. He said he hasn't dropped him, and it was for the team share, but he's protecting the player there, I think. He's dropped him.
what I'd say about this game in particular is that you know, Poyet said himself in the week that he had a specific game plan for this game. And that sort of lingered in my mind since he said it. And then when the team was picked, a lot of people were sort of surprised about the selection, and there was a few people complaining about it. But you got to remember, he said, you know, he had a specific system for this game. And I think that's interesting because the strikers played in that system, scored 3 goals. Now, is that system adaptable to play against other teams? Did they do things in that game that sort of were different to others? Were certain players doing different jobs? I don't think the fullbacks were getting forward anywhere near as much as they have in other games. They were holding.
The strikers were kind of going wide when we didn't have the ball, yeah. Weren't they? So there wasn't a need. I think that would work against stronger teams if you played like a more negative central midfield three. And then had 2 wingers and 2 forwards, because then you'd still get the opportunity.
Mm. What it is about Rodwell or Craig, I just think when Poy was asked, he said he thought Gomez offered more control. Now, to me, that suggests he didn't think Rodwell was doing enough. I don't know if I'm just the way I'm translating it.
Or is he just saying, I've got different options in the squad, and in this game, I wanted the player who is capable of controlling a game, whereas Rodwell, which he showed, albeit by sort of air kicking for when Fletcher got his third.
That was a great dummy.
That's what I was putting out there as well.
He's like, wanting an assist for that.
apparently he was credited with it. but he got in the box, he's in that area, you know what I mean? He's got 2 strikers on from the start in Wickham and Fletcher. Maybe he felt, I don't need that from Rodwell. My concern was that by taking Johnson and Rodwell out, 2 players who'd work very hard defensively, in the games that they've played so far, and putting Gomez, who's a little bit more passive.
That was a surprise, Gareth, though, wasn't it? Because what we're saying is he's maybe putting different players into suit the system. However, when you have Wickham in that front left position, you're going to get less work arguably coming back from him, so Rodwell playing in that defensive role would have been a more logical selection, you would have thought. I mean, it's worked, so we can't complain.
I think with Rodwell, I've said before, I think if you put him deeper, then I think he'd improve faster because he'd get on the ball more, whereas at the moment sometimes when he's playing that advanced he doesn't see enough of it. I think Gomez did okay. I think Larson, big fan of Larson, but I didn't think he had a great game. I thought he did okay, and Cattermole was, again, of the central three, was probably the pick of the bunch. But yeah, Gomez is just he's like one of the strangest players I've ever seen. Just not
really.
Do you remember
Sammy Easton?
I don't mean in a negative sense.
Sorry, Sam. You'll be listening.
I mean, like, I've never seen someone who plays so slowly in a game of quick tempo, but doesn't look out of his depth. It's not like he's struggling but he's playing.
Similar to Colback in a way.
No, he's like, nah, he's not like he plays like in a different, at a different pace. If, like the game's going on, and it's like he's in this like sort of space time vortex where he's like moving slower than everyone else. And it's bizarre. And even the ball, when he passes it, it seems to move slower.
I think he's just more comfortable on the ball than a lot of players.
I think he was fine.
And I think that's why he's brought him in, you know. And I think Rodwell's proved he's better arriving late into the box. And he's got that energy, and he's obviously better in the air and stuff like that. But I don't think that's... I think that's Gomez could play the sort of Sessegnon role when we played Sessegnon as, like, behind the two or behind the one. I think he's capable of doing that, whereas there isn't really that many other players at the club. So,
I think
if we don't play attacking at home to Stoke, having not won a game all season, then who are we going to play attacking an attacking team against? So it was kind of like five creative players on the pitch, and we won 3-1. So
it was still a surprise with the team selection with Wickham as well, wasn't it, Craig? The Wickham Fletcher thing. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, I wonder if it was a little bit. With the injuries as well, maybe it forced his hand, or maybe he did have lined up all along.
Maybe he wanted a bit of physicality up against the fullbacks.
Like I agree. I think
he picked two big lads, didn't he?
Well, three if you include Buckley. He's not small.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Buckley and so,
I think a lot of the players that he's brought in this year, even though they're creative, they're actually quite tall. And when he took over, there was definitely a theory within the club that, you know, we had Vaughan and Colback and Larson and Catamol and Bridcut, like, soon after. It was like a team of short arses, really. And then on set pieces, it's not necessarily, you know, like O'Shea and Brown and people like that would look after their men, but it was kind of like periphery midfielders who were scoring goals against us, because sort of four and five and six of the team were very small. And then I think he put the forwards kind of more wide, because he knew they weren't going to get much against their centre halves.
Well, we haven't had a midfield presence for years, have we? And I think that was a big Jack Rodwell. The decision to bring him in was a big part of that, I think, wasn't it, to offer some presence. But getting on to the centre forwards, all of that is great inside short team full of short arses, by the way. he's 2.5 minutes here, of course, speaking about Stephen Fletcher specifically.
The idea was, search a formula, sometimes, you know, better than anyone, that sometimes it doesn't work, and I accept responsibilities. Many times it happened, and other times it goes well, you know. People was only asking me about Fletch when he was not even on the bench, and now, you know, he started the game and scored two, so credit to him. It was hard. You don't imagine how hard it was for Fletch to be completely out of the squad, but that's what you're looking for, you know, a team player, a good reaction, score two goals, show the manager, kind of have a look at me, and the benefit of winning the game, which it put this start of the season in a totally different complex. Because I think the Fletch was doing very well in the beginning of the season, very, very well. He was holding the ball well, holding up the ball, linking well, making great touches, passes. But he needed to score, because at the end of the year, the strikers, they are judged by the quantity of goals. So we try to make him play that game, the game he likes and he can do, but at the same time to be in positions to score. Sometimes it's up to the team, like I said. Sometimes it's up to the player. Like, you know, the last goal is a striker goal. It's smelling, no, something is going to happen. I'm here. If everybody misses, I'm going to put it in. And that's what sometimes we need to look to score scrappy goals, goals that they're going to count, that nobody remembers, but they are very important for the team. First is a reward of what he was doing the last 10 days in training. You can see he was kind of free, you know, playing, good movement, good touches. He went into the game last week, he had a chance, you know, that he didn't have in the previous game. All this week, you know, like every session that we finish, we look with Tano, with Charlie, and, you know, looking at a Fletch in a very nice way. Then it's a decision. Like I said in the beginning, if everything goes good, you know, yes, well done, guys. A little bit of a clap on the back. But it's the player himself. It's him, being in there, being aggressive, being, you know, the movement for the header, the way he holds up the ball, the way he helps us to play. And the link with Connor. They've done it in pre-season, two or three times, especially, I think it was Betis and Udinese. And they've done it again today in the last ball. So we need those partnerships on the pitch.
Some contradictions there, I think, Craig. Gus saying that Fletcher's done this, you know, he's doing this himself with his performance, and that's what I've been saying to people. Because, like yourself, I was critical of him in the past. Not so much him, you know, judging his ability, but more his, you know, whether he fits into the system.
Yeah, that's always been my criticism.
Yeah, and
as well.
He's a centre forward who likes to play off a front man, isn't he? Now, Wickham did help because he kept you know, sort of coming across, didn't he? But I don't agree with Gus there when he said early in the season he was playing well and holding and giving it. No.
I think
not the way I remember it.
No, I think he struggled pretty badly with the lone striker role, and that was with Wickham on the left. They'd, I don't know, aid him in some way or other.
I think Wickham did more this week, to be fair.
Oh yeah, I'm not knocking Wickham for that either.
He's had his share
of poor games as well. For the good things he's done, yet again on the weekend he managed to cannon one into someone's legs from about 30 yards. But that run for the third was something else, wasn't it? I mean, the power, just sheer brutality of it almost. It's what you think Altidore's capable of, but he usually leaves the ball halfway through the run or like punts it out for a throw in or something. But if they continue like that, I mean, great. You can't knock it, can you?
You feel Wickham's got that in his locker, isn't it? It's similar to Adam Johnson, Gareth, when you look at a player who has the ability to run at defenders, and I've said this to you before, we're saying that you're Burnley, I think. They don't do it enough. Defenders don't like it. They really don't like it. Adam Johnson started running at some defenders. I mean, he always scored against Tottenham by doing it. And at Burnley, done it on one occasion, and they look beside themselves at defence. And do they do it enough? Does Wickham do it enough?
I think it's the opportunity presenting itself for them to do it.
Yeah, well, you can't just get your head down and run in bodies.
When you're winning,
bodies,
when you're winning in games, there's more space. And the game's more open. And there's opportunities to run it, run into space. And once you get, like, if you're a runner, like Craig says, if you're a runner like Wickham, who, you know, is just brute force, really, once he gets going, he was like a tank. I mean, see, Rodwell did his best to tackle him and then missed the open goal. But, like, Fletcher stuck it in. But
I think Rodwell wanted the ball off him, didn't he? But I think Wickham's major problem is he's just a bit stupid, isn't he? His decision making is like absolutely terrible. He'll shoot when he should pass.
The final
he'll
decision.
He'll pass
yeah.
when he should shoot. It's not that he's necessarily greedy. It just he always seems to make the wrong decision. And the obvious thing to do there would be to play somebody else in and then look for the pass back. But he ran all the way through. It worked out well. But you know, there's been
the first time this season a good time to do it.
Exactly.
Because his square ball was great as well. He knew exactly what he was doing, didn't he?
Yeah. Obviously, Rodwell got there. You know, he was deep. And he got there, so he wanted to be given the ball. But like you say, he nearly tackled him, and then he completely missed it. But I thought that Stephen Fletcher was a little bit disrespectful, to be honest with you.
I
know there's been a lot of tweets going out, but like, let's face it, you know, the last time he scored was against Cardiff away, and that 2-2. Yeah. He's a goal scorer. He's paid a lot of money from ourselves and the club, and so what, he's had a bit of grief on. on Twitter, maybe his lass shouldn't like post pictures of him eating donuts on Instagram, and then, you know, like it wouldn't happen. But
like posting pictures, I remember like during the transfer window or something, posting pictures. Oh, good meeting with the agent coming up, and like posting bottles of nice, getting a nice bottle of wine out and all this. It's like you need to think before you do stuff like this, because it's going to get if you're playing well, like Wickham in the summer when you had that whole champagne thing.
Yeah.
If we'd been relegated and Wickham had done that, Peter would have been mourning about it, even though he's well within his rights to do it. Fletcher does something like that and he's going to draw negative attention towards himself because he's out of form.
Exactly.
That's just the way it is.
His reaction on both goals was like condescending.
I thought it was stupid.
He could have kind of stretched his arms out, you know, and opened his palms as if to say, like, right, what have you got to say now? But he was kind of like, you know, doing this thing with the ear, like you do to away fans or whatever. Like, obviously, Super Kev did it famously to the Newcastle fans. But, you know, like, he's kind of trying to wind up his own people or the people that should be supporting him. And he's had grief because he's a striker who gets paid millions of pounds a year and he hasn't scored a goal for almost a year.
And he's looked disinterested as well.
Yeah,
had this happened just the first goal, Craig, I think you could possibly say, you know, his frustration now.
It's a release,
it's, yeah. It's been released, it's spilling out. But
he doesn't know when he's going to get a chance to do it.
To consciously do it on the second goal as well does sort of, you know, make it question it, doesn't it?
You just think, well, I don't know, maybe the criticism's actually forced him to reassess himself and do something.
He hasn't been criticised inside the ground, has he?
No, not at all.
I think you hear little things when you're warming up and stuff like that, but I mean, I'm sure everyone gets grief in different jobs, and he's well paid enough to shut up and get on with it, you know.
He never gets, like, he's not one of those, like you were saying, there's a ripple of sort of derisory applause when Larson gets substituted or whatever at the weekend. He's never subjected to that.
I can't recall it, he's never
subjected to criticism inside the stadium. There's a few groans in that when he gives a ball away or whatever, which was happening far too frequently, but that happens to lots of players when they give the ball away. I mean, there's been criticism online and stuff, but, you know, don't do daft stuff when you're not playing very well. And he hasn't
read the internet.
Do something else with your time. I could understand if he'd been, you know, playing well and, you know, he was a bit unfortunate maybe or whatever, but he must know himself that he hasn't been playing to his ability.
For two years.
Yeah, and this is the thing, it's like to do what he did, I just thought, it annoyed me because I just thought, well, what's the point? It shows a lack of self-awareness of how you've been playing for the last 2 years, like you say, Martin. It's not like, it's like, oh, see, I've been this good all along. It's like, well, you haven't, have you? Because, you know, I just think maybe the best thing to do is just score 5 or 6 goals in 15 games and then maybe try and get yourself 12 to 15 goals at the end of the season, and then at the end of the season reflect and go, well, I haven't been playing that well the last few years. But I've answered my, like, there have been critics, but I've got quality and I've answered my critics, and that's the best way you can do it, and people respect that. But like Gordon supporters, when you've done something good, is because if he goes on a run now where he doesn't score for 10 games, he's going to look like an idiot. Because what's he going to do after 10 games?
He looks like an idiot anyway. Well,
he looks like an idiot with that hair, doesn't he?
well, hair.
Well, what did he do well, Craig? Because rather than, I don't want to go out on a negative note with him, because he did score 2 goals. He was man of the match. No, but in his performance, because we've not, but you and I both questioned previously, smart ass, that he looks like he can't play that long striker role. So what
put
did
a
he
nice
do?
Ball in with his right foot as well, didn't he? And you know what? The hunger he showed there. The desire to, like, beat that player and put that ball in, like, I've not seen anything like that from him for a long time.
I agree, and
he's cut out all that.
Something myself similar earlier today that you need that from your lone strike. You need to assist as well, and he's never really showed that he has the understanding to do that.
I think he has actually. I think he's got a decent touch and he can pass the ball. But what he's fallen into the trap of recently is these stupid little flicks. And he was doing it to attempt shots as well. Like, he's flicking his foot and his heel. And he cut that out. And he just played football. And he looked much better for it. And his movement was better.
His movement was much better, Martin, wasn't it? Off the ball, he's run. I've never seen him. I mean, he was pulling defenders out of position and stuff. And generally, he's always had good movement inside the box. If you remember when he first came, when Martin O'Neill was here, that's how he scored all those goals when he first came, because he could get away from his man for a split-second finish. But I'm talking about movement in the channels and everywhere.
I mean, I think when he first came with O'Neill, he was obviously his buy. And we were, like, sort of had a game plan around creating situations for him. Whereas I think maybe recently he hasn't felt as loved or whatever, and he hasn't been as good. There's probably been times when Altidore's started ahead of him where he's been thinking, well, you know, this, like, what have I done wrong? But he hasn't been fit for such a long time that it's great that he scored a couple of goals, but I think he needs to be more of a team player generally. Strikers often fall into that trap. But there has been times when he's been playing up front on his own, and he's had the ball and there's been, like, no one to lay it off to, and he's not strong enough to kind of, he can take the first touch, but then once someone comes into him, he's not strong enough, like Wickham, to, like, hold it up for that extra couple of seconds while someone runs through.
We said before, previously, Gareth Dunn would be great if you could mould those two players together. If he had Wickham's strength and touch and hold up player, and it's, then could
it's,
finish like
it's
that.
Very hard, isn't it? I mean, to be that one player who plays up front on their own. If we signed Kevin Phillips now 15 years ago,
he couldn't
play that system, and would be saying, well, you know, what's wrong with him? And that's the best striker, you know, we can remember, you know.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, because they always used to say, oh, if he'd gone to Arsenal or whatever, the chances they create, the amount of goals he would have scored. But football doesn't work like that, does it? That's like fantasy land. And it's the same with us. Fletcher could quite easily have gone in the summer to someone like Leicester, who played 2 up front, and he could have been doing a bit of what Ajoa has been doing, and, like, scoring headed goals, and we'd all have been thinking, oh, well, why couldn't he do
I
that
I thought
for
he had
us?
Moved to Hull,
you know?
So Steve Bruce playing 2 up front, I thought he's bound
exactly.
to Fletcher.
But it just shows you that, but I think it's also a positive from Poyet as well, because he does sort of, he sort of, like, teaches players and maybe it's just taking a little bit longer with him. But he's obviously thought them two can play together in a system that isn't two and out and out strikers, because he's done it in the summer and he talked about them enjoying playing together, and it just suddenly worked. So maybe,
and it was
maybe we just have to be
it?
A bit more patient.
We need to praise them both because they followed the game.
I think the interesting comment as well by Fletcher was something that he said there, that under basically saying that the manager who signed him, O'Neill, he scored goals because they put crosses in and all that. It's like, well, he didn't score a headed goal under Martin O'Neill. I know, like, not every cross has to come in the air for a header, but that is unusual. That he was, I think the season before he signed for Sunderland, he was the top goal scorer of headers in Europe.
I mean, something we've always said about Fletcher when we've been sort of criticising him, or as I say, you know, criticising is a bit strong. It's
I think that's the difference. I think a few people react, and I started talking about this on Twitter earlier, about that it was specifically the celebration thing, Martin, and the few responses were like, oh well, you know, if you give it you got to be able to take it, and you know, like, sort of that sort of thing, and people writing them off. I don't think anybody, like, any logical person written them off, because everyone knows what he's capable of, and everyone knows, you know, that he's got quality and he's proven it. But I think the issue was that he dropped off at Sunderland, and it's also whether or not the system was suited to him. So it wasn't like saying that Fletcher's a bad player, it was just maybe it wasn't a right fit anymore. And I think that's a fair comment, but he's not a rubbish player, and he never has been a rubbish player.
Gus is saying it himself. He said it there that he's doing it himself. He's dropped him and it's given the kick up the backside, and he's came back in training, so that's down to the player, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that everyone needs every now and again. You know, people will be more up for certain games, you know, for whatever reason. Like, we as fans always think, well, you know, if I was playing for Sunderland, I'd be like, you know,
rubbish.
In our own heads, would be amazing. But like, they still probably have, like, arguments with the missus on the day of the game, or something happens that'll knock them off the, you know, like, knock them off the form. Or like Johnson, he's clearly, like, a confidence player. He can do anything he wants when he wants to, and then other games, he's just completely anonymous. I think that's what we're saying about, I was going to make that point before, you know, when he was saying when he runs the players, he looks amazing. And that goal at against Spurs, which was a bit lucky, really, but, you know, because it hit people on the way in, it was the right time to get the goal. But the way we're playing at the minute, there's so much kind of emphasis on, like, keeping the ball, that I think
Spurs players forget to do it, don't they? Yeah,
exactly. I think sometimes they get that ball there, and then because if you do try and take somebody on, it's probably a 50-50 chance you're going to give away possession. And then you're that person that gives away possession, then we have to fight to get the ball back. But we over-elaborate, you know, and we haven't got the players like Arsenal have to just basically pass teams to death.
And even they over-elaborate at times, and they've got better players for.
Yeah.
But it's a good point, Craig, isn't it? Because I guess that's what I was driving at earlier when I was saying that the likes of Wickham Johnson sometimes don't run at defenders enough. Because if you look at the game against Swansea, we played really well. We created sort of half chances, but sometimes you've just got to, you know, somebody's got to just take it by the scruff of the neck, haven't they?
Take a risk.
Yeah, well, it's tempo as well, isn't it? I mean, we've kind of moved it a bit quicker. Again, we've stepped it up a gear the last couple of games, and it's noticeable. Because if you get the ball to players like Wickham, not so much for the third because he ran from quite deep, but if you're getting it to them in higher up the pitch, it's less of a risk to run at the defender. If you're running at them from the halfway line and you lose it, it's a risk. You can't afford to lose the ball there. So, I mean, that was the argument under O'Neill, that we just didn't get the ball at the likes of, like, Johnson high enough up the pitch. And for all his vast number of faults, when Di Canio was here briefly, there was periods where at least Johnson was getting in the game right, you know, on his fullback. I thought we actually were arguably better against Swansea in some respect.
I think we've done.
I would agree with that. But I just mean, There was more risk taken on at the weekend. I think that
maybe,
you know, we scored three goals, we could have scored more, even though we weren't great. Against Swansea, we weren't going to score.
I think we kind of flooded
the midfield against Swansea, didn't we? But by playing the system we did on Saturday against Stoke, he allowed them more possession in midfield because we had like a man less, even though he tried to get the forwards to come back and tuck in. It's always going to happen. And I think, like, against Burnley and Swansea, we had the ball, like, all the time, but, like, not enough penetration. And, like, the third goal proved they were coming at us because they had the ball in that situation, and then we picked them off on the break. But I do sort of see different. He is trying to make a difference, set up for, you know, to have a go at the opponents each time. But we just haven't been scoring enough goals. But then, obviously, when the two strikers both get them, it starts making you believe that there's more to come.
I think they should be, for how they've played this season, I think they deserve to be 2 or 3 points better off, personally. I know that, you know, you get what you're given and you get what you deserve, I guess, at the end of the season.
The Burnley one was a letdown for me. I thought that game was there for the two.
But there's other games, like the Swansea game, they could have, you know, taken the 3 points there. I think they probably could have taken a point at QBR, wasn't it? I still think they were worth a point at QBR, though.
But if you look at the way other teams have completely taken them apart and they've had no fight, like, you know, I was convinced we were going to win that game, but that shows how much I know.
Well, no, but that's typical Sunderland.
They had it written all over it. I just thought we would lose that QPR game.
Yeah,
just,
I did as well.
It was funny, they actually did show some fight. I think it's the only game Leroy Fair actually really has.
Yeah.
Fought for the ball a bit and made a big
Leroy
difference.
Fair.
Yeah. But they, you know, they what can you say? We had like good chances in that game.
Yeah.
Good chances.
No, they did. Yeah, well, Van Aanholt had that one after about 30 seconds, didn't he? But yeah, I mean, that's going, like, I guess, in national breaks, I guess, is a good time to sort of assess generally some of the elements of the season. I would say, like, just briefly, that I think that
Gus Bradley's looking forward to the break, because he got put to him. You know, is this a bad time? You're breaking up a little bit of momentum here. You've two good performances, 4 points, and Gus was like, kind of, no, I think we'll take it now. You mentioned Van Aanholt there, Gareth. I said to you the other week, I thought he was possibly going to be one of the finds of the season. Are you starting to get on board with that now?
I echoed that in my echo article
this week.
I did, yeah. Did you not read it? Did you?
I will do. It's,
yeah, well,
I flagged it to read.
when you need to drop off to sleep.
Yeah, it's too late now. 500 words.
It's just his voice that does that. He's reading. He's writing. It's fine.
Well,
yeah, my old man's been griefing him, and
Gareth.
Well, obviously Gareth, yeah. And he was like, you know, this new fullback. But he had to shut up on Saturday, and he had to shut up at Virginia as well. So,
well, definitely. I mean, the two of them, Craig. I mean, you two were at West Brom, and you were talking about he's meandering. That's the term you were using, saying he was wandering off. Now, we did think that Wes Brown would help solve that, and he did, certainly, because he was playing alongside him. Wes Brown wasn't playing Saturday, and Van Aanholt's...
He's got John O'Shea alongside him as well, hasn't he?
Well, yeah. And
he's just getting used to the way the game's played in this country. You can't just go chasing the ball all the time. You've got to have a bit more defensive discipline, and he's picked it up extremely quickly and looks a very competent defensive fullback and a good one going forward as well. Nobody's speaking
about Alonso suddenly, Gareth. That's a telltale sign itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still don't think he's as good as Alonso, but his speed's something that we need to sort of build into our game plan, because he is the fastest player at the club, and he can really move. But he's obviously been used to playing in a different system as well, hasn't he? He's like in a more advanced wing back.
I think Alonso got Man of the Match his first game, but then he had a few where he wasn't great.
The thing about Alonso, I think what was good about him is that he had that dodgy spell, and then he came back from it. He learned from it. I think comparatively, Van Aanholt, he's cut the how quickly he's come on in this short space of time has been really impressive, and I thought the in the game against Stoke, it was his most mature performance as a fullback. From a defensive perspective, he was hardly noticeable, a bit like Jones. Thought the pair of them were just.
Thought Jones was brilliant.
He gives up four great balance, doesn't it? It makes such a difference, doesn't it?
I thought one of the defenders should have been man of the match, but obviously if you score two goals and make the other one, then you're going to get noticed for that. But I thought Virginia or Van Aanholt should have.
I was actually really impressed with O'Shea bringing the ball out quite a lot. The odd straight pass, but Virginia was guilty of that as well.
Yeah.
And O'Shea's another one. He's a bit like Larson. Doesn't seem to matter what he does. There's always going to be someone who's calling him out for being this, that, or the other, and wanting him out of the team. But I thought he was really good on the weekend.
Well, I mean, there's the argument now that O'Shea, like Virginie, now they've got to up the game, because Wes Brown's sitting on the bench now. With respect to Virginie, you know, people are probably more aware of somebody like Wes Brown sitting on the bench to replace him, aren't they?
Definitely. And I'm a massive fan of Wes Brown. He's excellent, but like Virginie, again, I talked about the defence, like based Jones, Virginie, and how the forwards basically took the plaudits this weekend, and a lot of focus has been on our forward play, but at the back, you know, got one of the best defensive records in the league, and there's players who've come in, we've signed two permanent fullbacks in the summer, and they both look really good. I know it's early days, and Virginie's come back, and he sort of rebuilt his confidence back end of last season, and now he's playing centre-half, where, you know, against in that Arsenal game, as we heard from Gus last week, he had a nightmare, and now he looks like, you know, the Argentine
Beckenbauer. I was worried, I'll be honest, Martin, I was worried about Peter Crouch against him, because Peter Crouch likes to shove people, push them, pull the shirt. He's one of the worst for it, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, you assume Virginia might struggle with, but, you know, no problems whatsoever.
Crouch avoided O'Shea, didn't he? He went straight to Virginia.
Yeah.
He makes defending look easy, doesn't he? That's when you watch.
Because he reads the game, so he doesn't need the recovery tackle thing, does he? Because he reads the game.
I think he's probably got one of the best touches at the club, you know, to be honest with you. Even when he was playing fullback at Burnley, like, every time he got the ball, he was comfortable. But I think, as Crouch is kind of, you know, the way he's obviously difficult to play against, but I think he did well against him. We shouldn't be afraid of players like that. We should try and I think that's what we did on Saturday. We concentrated on the attacking side, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only player you should be afraid of is Charlie Adam, in case he's going to break your legs.
Yeah,
he's
horrific. Well, there is that.
And he's awful. Mm. Him.
I like the dives as well in the second
half. Yeah,
he's the biggest. You
tried one, and then 5 minutes later, and I was turned to Michael straight away and says he's gonna go down here, and of course he did. Luckily the ref wasn't buying that. Yeah, but we're fortunate, just quickly, that Victor Moses got injured. Is that fair to say?
It's funny, isn't it? Asaidi goes from, you know, Gareth, you were particularly impressed with him.
I thought he was great again when he came on.
I don't think he was at all. I thought he was all farting-y pap.
I like his positivity, though. Like, he wants to go at people.
Didn't feel threatened by him.
Nah, not at all. Whereas Moses, he's got another gear in him, Moses.
I don't know. I really like that Asaidi, and what I've seen about 3 or 4 times, and I think he's going to be a good player.
He's capable of stuff, like, don't get us wrong, but he never really had the beating of Jones. I think it was commendable from Jones as well.
Jones has got a bit of a nasty streak in him, and at times he's sort of, he looks like quite, you know, like he should be in The Who or something, and then he's like, well, actually some people in The Who did have a nasty streak, allegedly.
Well,
but he goes around there, you know, doing his job and that, but he does some nasty little stuff, and like he did a stupid tackle on Asiedi with about 20 minutes to go that got himself booked, and I was worried because I thought, well, you've been isolated a few times against him, and if he gets one on one with you, you can't tackle him.
Yeah, but he did get one on one with him, and he did tackle him.
No, he dealt with him better after his yellow card than he did.
Yeah, sometimes that calms like full backs down, because they know they can't dive in, so they have to like be more positionally sound. And if you don't dive in, then he's probably not going to get past you, is he? Mm. You just like stay and block.
He just used his strength, and he's got more power than Asaidi. He's quite small.
He's really little, isn't he?
I think the slight reshuffle at the back, personally. I mean, Virginia, as you said, Martin was doing fine at right back. He had a good touch and stuff. But putting Jones in there and moving Virginia at the back, I think that's just a subtle change, and I think it's made a massive difference, because that back line looks neat and structured now.
I think that's what he wanted, you know, but obviously through injuries and shuffling the team around, he hasn't really been able to have those two fullbacks, you know, there week in, week out.
Mm-hmm. Right, Gareth, did you sort the question of the week out this week?
It wasn't.
It was very optimistic, because I think he only
posted
it.
I just came up with it because of your stupidity.
It wasn't my fault.
There's an element of stupidity about what you did, isn't there, Stephen?
I slipped over on some sick on Saturday night.
Charlie wasn't Chapman my over
sick.
There.
I wasn't the sick of anybody I was with.
That's what happens when you go to Newcastle.
Yeah.
If you go out on a night out.
There's carrots in it.
I didn't have the state of mind to check that out, if I'm being honest with you.
So what I asked was, just quickly, if anybody...
I put my back out anyway, because we'll have sort of heavily bruised, cracked my ribs at the back, and
medical report.
Smacked up off painkillers at the moment.
I was going to say, on the codeine.
Codeine, yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff, that.
Yeah.
That's why we've got... I just said, has anybody... What's the worst you've come off, basically, when you've been drunk and done something stupid?
Mm. No prizes, because it was a very late one.
This was quite a good one, though. Not me, but a mate broke his ankle slipping in the willow pond on a bit of worn carpet, but stopped out, and he drank for a few more hours, where we proceeded to fill his shoe with pickled onions when he took it off. I don't know if...
Wasn't Julio, like, was it?
I don't know if that's an old wives' tale thing, like, oh, fill a shoe with pickled onions, heals a broken ankle. Who knows?
I think it was more just make his feet stinky. Yeah.
I think Lawmaster might need to get more drunk because all he's ever done is knocked a can of Diet Coke. And he said, don't know why he said that. Knocked a can of Coke flying. I don't know if it was Diet. It might have been that new green Coke, which has got
could
like
be the zero.
Sweeteners.
Aye, there's many zero. Cokes. What about that caffeine free? That's an old school thought.
What's the point in that?
Are exactly. Other drinks available too?
Yeah. Paul. Nah. Paul Jake said waking up in hospital. He doesn't say how he got there. Paul Scott said slice my foot open getting into bed. Trip to hospital, they just looked in my wound to check my tendons. Mm.
It's a shame that my mate Chris Hardy didn't enter it because he fell asleep on some female settee once that he was hoping not to be on the settee of, but in the bedroom. And she gave him a glass of wine to kind of sedate him. And he fell on the glass of wine during the night and it went straight into his neck. Jesus. And he's still got the scar to prove it.
Wow.
So he's obviously not on Twitter
that's
today.
War
that's his favourite story.
Phil
says...
I would be lying about it. I'd say that I got glassed off some ladders. I was protecting them somewhere.
No, I would tell the truth. It's funnier.
Right, so what else have we got here? Phil says he attempted to clothesline his boss outside of the curry house, missed and went over on a curb, broke his ankle.
That's a good one.
I don't know why he was trying to clothesline his boss. You know?
If we had a prize, that would be good enough as a winner for me, I think.
Yeah. Rory Fallow said that he ended up with Kader Mangan in his fantasy team after the drunk high of the first 3-0 against the Mags. Steve Waggett, at Steve Waggett, says first week at uni, got drunk, went on the dance floor and dislocated his kneecap, busting some moves. 8 weeks on crutches followed up by dislocating my other knee during relations, he likes to call them, with his girlfriend on another drunken night out. Hashtag knackered knees.
He's obviously got weak knees, like, hasn't he?
Yeah. Nick Holden says no comment. Best leave that one there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Well.
news. Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. We've got that other thing as well, haven't we? The thing that everyone hates.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, we're just about
hate
to end
is gonna
it.
Hate.
If you are one, if you are one of those people who think listening to the flat is akin to watching a family member die, as somebody put it, then turn off now. I think you should give it another chance, though, because it gets better on from here anyway. I think.
I just think people have just lack the ability to process its quality.
Well, no, let's not slag our listeners off.
If
you want to turn off, if you don't want to...
Gareth's pulling a full Stephen Fletcher here.
Yes. If you don't want to listen to the flat, then turn off now. Wiseman says back in 2 weeks because we watch a Cattermole-less England player. Sun FM show, Into the Light, will be on Thursday, though. So watch out for that. Here's the flat. Thanks for listening. Over and out.
Last week on The Flat, the unsuccessful integration of Big Sam Allardyce leads Alan and Steve to continue their search for the right flatmate. Big Sam's sheer arrogance was just too much for the Geordie twosome and he was unceremoniously dumped. Sam would argue he left with his pride intact. He certainly left with sacks and sacks of gravy. Now Steve is offering up a risky alternative.
You know, Alan, maybe your man Sam was just too safe of an option. Sometimes you need to take a risk in this situation, otherwise we'll end up having our backsides kicked yet again. That's for sure.
But sometimes when you take a risk on a maverick, you end up straggling and tired of dealing with the problems. Look at that, him. I prefer to go with a safer option. A true Geordie gentleman. Someone like Shawler.
Don't get me wrong. I love a striker, as you well know. Absolutely. But maybe we need to give someone with a bit of fire in the old belly. Someone who needs a second chance. Someone who knows all about the pressures of the North East, especially over at Sunderland. You know?
But who've you got in mind?
Let me make a few phone calls, because my fax machine is broken.
Steve makes the all-important call. When the door knocks, Alan can't believe the risk Steve has taken.
That'll be him.
I'll get it. Oh, no.
Hello, Alan. Is it me? A Paolo?
In spite of Steve's delight at the flat's new acquisition, Alan remains unconvinced. Well, I'm struggling with the idea, to be honest. Obviously, the first time we met, we didn't get off to the best of starts when he gave me a slap round the chops. Then we lost the game because we was tired from the Thursday, then playing on a Sunday, and then we was having the injuries. He could have been a little more respectful of the situation. Plus,
The Carpeterson here look tired enough already. We can't be having him knees sliding around the place. We'll lose our deposit for a start. But it's not only Alan who is less than impressed. Paolo's early impressions are not good at all.
I take a look around in here. Is it not good? You have the Steve. He is asleep until 11 in the morning. He is a sloth. The face looks like it's been stung by 1,000 bees. And he has had allergic reaction. The diet is not good. The 7 packets of the sausage roll, bad for the body. With the Paolo de Canio, but it is processed food and fat into his body. Paolo would not. I do not accept it. He's unprofessional. Don't even get me started on the condiment situation. And then there is Alan himself, with the hair gel and the thin t-shirt. In this weather, in the north, you think he is a pretty boy when he should be concentration on being professional. He's always said to me, I am tired, I am struggling. Is a Paolo tired of struggling? Of course not. A proper diet and a proper rest is what is important. It's about a passion, a desire, a quality. If you don't have these things, then you cannot expect to achieve in life. In your job?
No. 28 minutes later.
And this is only beginning. You have to start now. And when an eagle swoop and catches the prey with talon for the purpose of feeding a family, then it drops the prey into the sea. The family starve. The eagle has failed itself. It has failed its family. His family die. Paolo always makes sure his talon is sharp. His wingspan is great. His lung capacity is strong.
14 minutes later, and not one single person has any clue what Paolo is going on about.
Is it difficult? Yes. Of course he's difficult. But Paolo would not accept the easy challenge. I change everything.
After Paolo's 53-minute rant, even Steve is starting to have serious reservations about Paolo's tenure in the flat.
Well, you know, I've dealt with some of the world's top players. And as a result, your top egos, your Dugries, your Jans, not to mention your DJ Campbells of this world. But Paolo, well, the lad is off the scale, that's for sure. I don't mind different personalities. The lad certainly brings that to the table. But I also believe in second chances, and I felt the boy deserved one. Especially after what happened down at Sunderland, and I can relate to that, no doubt about it. But the boy's gone too far. This morning, he's gone and turfed 4 packets of hobnobs, you know. I won't be having it.
But nothing could prepare Steve for what would happen next.
Alan, what in God name's going on?
I'm packing. We was being kicked out by Paolo.
What? He can't be doing that. That's outside of his authority, no doubt about it.
He says he wants really. He's going to bring in his own flatmates in, who understand his philosophy because we was struggling to get it. He's tired of us. It turns out that Paolo lost it after some unsavoury dinner table antics, instigated by an unaware Steve Bruce.
And when you come together for dinner, and you prepare a meal for everybody, made with a love, with a passion, the desire, and then a Steve, he come in, he sit down, he look at this salad, the quality ingredient. Then he retract his head. He's unacceptable. I don't expect to be treated like a Chef Ramsay or an Oliver, but this behaviour is not professional. It's time for revolution.
Unbeknown to Paolo, Steve has a plan to counter this so-called revolution.
Come on, Alan. This is our place, no doubt about it. You can't just come in and change everything just like that. Absolutely. We won't be having it. I won't be hounded out again, like I was down at Sunderland. I'm calling the landlord.
Steve makes the call, and after an emergency meeting between himself, Alan, and the landlord, Paolo is unceremoniously dumped out of the flat after just 5 days.
Is it typical of the modern flatmate? The lack of the commitment, the desire, the passion, and the quality is unacceptable. They just want good enough to live in a flat with me. They do not understand the philosophy that the Paolo bring. Give me the time. I bring a success to the flat. I will be back, but at a better flat, with a better flatmate and the right philosophy.
The whereabouts of Paolo Di Canio are currently unknown. He truly believes he'll be given another chance in a top quality flat somewhere else. The reality of the situation is that he'd probably have to move into a maisonette in Slough alone and begin to repair his reputation. As for Steve and Alan, the search for their elusive flatmate continues.